Welcome to the Next Level Human Podcast. As a human, you have a job to do. In fact, you have four jobs: to earn and manage money, to attain and maintain health and fitness, to build and sustain personal relationships, to find meaning and make a difference. None of these jobs are taught in school. And that is what this podcast is designed to do: to educate us all on living our most fulfilled lives through the mastery of these four jobs. I'm your host, Dr. Jade Tita, and I believe we are here living this life for three reasons and three reasons only: to learn, to teach, and to love. In this podcast, I will be learning, teaching, and loving right along with you. I'm grateful to have your company. Here's to our next level. Welcome to the show, everybody. I have a fun guest today, Dr. Emily Kybird. Fun because we're going to be talking about thyroid, Hashimoto's stuff. And as many of you know, this is a condition I suffer with, which is odd for a man because it mostly impacts women. And we have an expert on the show because this is something that I get asked about all of the time. And so I wanted to bring Dr. Kybird on to have a discussion about this. And she comes at this from a unique perspective. So I'm going to let you, Emily, tell them a little bit about how you got into this work, a little bit how you, sort of came to be doing this. And I know that you have a slightly different approach to the treatment of thyroid conditions compared to most clinicians. So why don't you just walk us through sort of your story, how you got here, and your sort of take on this condition and thyroid stuff in general.
Jade, thanks so much for having me on. I've been a chiropractor since 2007. I am one of those chiropractors who only adjusts when indicated. So I do a lot of rehab, a lot of strength training, you know, just trying to get to the root cause more than just an adjustment. And in 2015, I had my first kiddo, who's now almost eight, and all the new mom symptoms were just debilitating. And as a new mom, you just don't know. You're like, I'm exhausted, my hair's falling out, I can't lose weight. And everyone just kind of tells you, yeah, that's normal, you're a new mom. Well, 18 months postpartum, I'm like, this cannot be normal. This is not my life. I cannot be crashing at 2 p.m. every day, holding on to about 40 pounds of extra weight, massive brain fog. And I had a clinic in New York City, you know, seeing patients from a biomechanical strength, you know, overuse injuries, lots of people sitting all day. And I could start my sentence communicating a diagnosis and a treatment plan, and I couldn't finish my sentence. You know, I was running a team of 10, probably suffering from adrenal issues as well. And I just started to kind of walk this path of seeing different doctors, primary care, endocrinologists, two functional medicine docs, landed on a third. And she's like, has no one tested more than your TSH? I was like, I don't even know. And she's like, yeah, you know, she took a ton of blood work. This is Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. And she's like, you have Hashimoto's. And we're, you know, we caught it early, which is great. Certain percentage of people can go into remission if we catch it early and we take the right steps. And that was the process through like 2016 to 2018, was cleaning up how I was eating. You know, I was like doing a very Parisian New York, like coffee and croissant in the morning, skipping lunch, and then having like a little piece of steak. Like, I wasn't overeating. Let's just say that. And identifying some root causes. So living in mold in my condo at the time was a really big piece that helped me go into remission, and changing how I was working out. And I was overtraining. I was doing double Soul Cycle classes. So that's 90 minutes. Or I would go to Soul Cycle and I'd walk across the street and I'd go to a Barry's Boot Camp, which is kind of like Orange Theory, high intensity interval training, with the hope to lose the baby weight. And the weight was not coming off. I was exhausted. I was trying to do that 5 days a week. And I had a background in strong first kettlebell training, but I wasn't tapping into it for whatever reason. Like, I wasn't like, hey, let's just do 20 minutes strength base, not 5 days a week. Maybe it was the Hashi brain fog. I don't know. But part of that journey was changing the lifestyle factors, how I was eating. And then the piece that I think no one really talks about is this workout piece, this overtraining piece. And so dialed those pieces in, probably took 9 months to start to feel better, took about a year and a half to go into remission, and then stayed in remission even through a second pregnancy, because a lot of times pregnancy can trigger Hashimoto's, re-aggravate it. And, you know, I was co-treating with a lot of functional medicine docs. I was looking at women, and I still do today, the autoimmune population through the lens of strength and movement. And, you know, very different than when you sit down with a doctor and they're like reading your labs and making a game plan and, you know, recommending lifestyle changes. And then you get out of the seat and you walk out the door. And, you know, especially being hypothyroid, that component of Hashimoto's, it is so much harder to maintain our muscle mass. And that was really my focus, was like helping women alleviate some of the joint pain and muscle aches that comes with Hashimoto's, and then start to get them strong in a way that doesn't make them feel like I can't get out of bed for 3 days. So that was my journey. And now I do that with women all over the world online. I have a course called Thyroid Strong. And I love to let the naturopaths and the functional medicine docs deal with that piece. And I deal with the strength and the rehab and the movement piece.
Cool. Yeah, this is really, really interesting, because it dovetails into a lot of what my work in metabolism has mainly been over the years, which is essentially this idea that, yes, we need to train, but over-exercising, under-eating is just as much a stress to the physiology for many people as overeating and under-training. And so it sounds like this is sort of what you came to. So walk us through the beginning of this, because you said there were several triggers, mold, you know, perhaps pregnancy. And let's go through sort of the approach. I want to know a little bit about the approach that you use lifestyle wise, just with diet, exercise, lifestyle. And then I want to get into your approach to training and why that is so important. But walk us through some of the things that you did. And actually, before you even get into that, are you currently taking medications? Did you ever come off medications? Did you ever go on?
Yeah, I took Cytomel for about 6 months and came off of it. And I don't currently take any medication. I was also taking, you know, BPC 157, Amylexinox, low dose naltrexone. Those are some of the other things I was taking. But currently I don't take any medication, and I get my thyroid labs. I get a lot of labs checked every quarter. Yeah.
Cool. So that's pretty cool. As you listeners listen to this, this is someone who, you know, was going through Hashimoto's, had a difficult time, fixed the issues, and is now no longer taking any thyroid medication at all, which a lot of, just so everyone listening understands, a lot of physicians would say that's impossible to do. But Emily and I will tell you, it's definitely not. It absolutely can be done. And it comes along with, you know, sort of this individualized plan that is lifestyle oriented, that is a must if you're going to deal with this condition. So walk us through some of the things that you did in lieu of the exercise, because I want to really focus on exercise, because I know that's your expertise and how you did that. But let's go through first some of the other things you did: supplements, diet, just lifestyle elements. And I know this, I mean, gosh, I can't even imagine, right? You're a new mom. That in itself is stressful. It's a whole new world. And then you're dealing with Hashimoto's and fixing this as well. Plus you're seeing clinicians full time. So this must have been an incredibly difficult time for you. So I just want to hear how you, in detail, how you kind of climbed out of it.
Some of my symptoms that were even more present than the fatigue was a histamine intolerance. So I had some eczema on my hand, like basically on the entire palm of my hand and a little bit on the outside of my mouth. And every time I would eat, my tongue would burn. So obviously a histamine intolerance, a little bit of like borderline mast cell activation. And that was really the thing. I wasn't even thinking about the fatigue. You know, some of the doctors, when I first met them, they were like, oh, you just have maybe some postpartum thyroiditis. It will clear after 12 months. Most usually resolves after 12 months. And some of the things I did when I met Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, obviously she promotes a optimal protein. Some people consider like high-end protein. Approach to eating. I was kind of like pounding carbs and caffeine just to get myself through the day. So I was starting my day with protein, 5 eggs. I tolerated eggs. Some people don't. And every single meal, it was like, you're going to eat three meals. You're not going to skip lunch. And it's going to be protein forward. So minimum 30 grams and no gluten, no dairy, no alcohol, corn, soy, basically an elimination diet. There wasn't necessarily a reintroduction phase. I still don't eat gluten. I got a headache. I try to minimize dairy. And, there wasn't a reintroduction phase, which I know some people, you know, are not for because you don't want to be so limited, but it really just dialed it to like protein and veg, kind of a paleo-esque eating style and making sure I was eating. Sleeping was difficult because I had an 18-month-old who did not want to sleep, but I was kind of prioritizing work. I would like work until midnight, wake up at six, go run through another 12-hour day. So part of the process, lifestyle process, was hiring help, hiring more chiropractors to help work under me, trying to put the right people in the right places so that it didn't feel like I had to have a touch point on everything, which, you know, a lot of people probably won't think of like, oh, a change in lifestyle, but I'm not very good at asking for help. So asking for help, especially as a new mom, you know, I think Gabrielle and myself also focus on, you know, what are the big three? Sleeping, eating, exercising. So dialing down the exercise, which we'll talk about, and then starting to dive into root causes. So I was on a lot of different, I guess you could say, supplement protocols, one to help with adrenal health, one to help with gut health. And then we started to dive into mold and mycotoxins, especially with that histamine component and this hormonal eczema that was coming up. And, you know, it was binders, sauna three times a week, dry brushing, scrubbing with charcoal soap after, taking binders after sauna. And, you know, part of the process was remediating our apartment, but it came back. So we had to remediate again. And then we sold the place because we couldn't find the leak. But I think it was interesting because my thyroid labs got better despite I was still living in mold. Like I was kind of dialing down the load, still living in it, which is not ideal, but, you know, taking binders and a lot of supplements like glutathione to just help support my body. I was also not in my apartment all day. I was at work all day. Then we went through a parasite protocol because in my early 20s, I did a lot of travel through India, Nepal, Thailand. I got sick in every developing country I ever went to. And I would do conventional stool tests, even, you know, like a GI map, like a PCR stool test, and no parasites. I was like, there's no way I don't have parasites. I've been sick, you know, all traveling through the world. And, did a stool test out of a university in called EKO University, where they plate. And they're like, oh yeah, you have high load of hookworm and roundworm and pinworms. So that was part of the process that also probably helped with the histamine, the brain fog, the fatigue. Did a heavy metal challenge test. Just kind of started to tick like the boxes. You know, I did a lot of construction work with my dad when I was a teenager. He's a roofer. So just kind of getting into different shingles and construction material. So did a heavy metal challenge test, did a heavy metal detox. I think the biggest dial movers for me were the mold and the parasites. That's when I really started to feel my energy come back, hormonal eczema get better, brain fog got better. So those were some of the root causes. You know, I had some insulin resistance I had to manage. It was like all these things, you know, New York is very moldy and toxic in so many different capacities. And it's, you know, so amazing too, the energy. But from an environmental perspective, like you go into every building that has a flat roof that doesn't get checked, that probably doesn't get drained, and it smells musty. And that's not normal, but people don't know that. So those were some of the things I started to dial in. You know, when I was first diagnosed, my TSH was 3.2. So it's without, you know, outside optimal functional medicine range, but within conventional range. And I think that's why,
Yeah, I was going to say the listener should know that wouldn't be flagged by a conventional doctor. It might even be flagged. It might not even be flagged by someone like me, especially if there's no symptoms. So that's a tough to make that diagnosis.
My vitamin D was 18. Probably from just going from building to subway to building in New York. And there was, you know, people always ask like, oh, what supplements do you take? I was like, well, it depends on what I'm working on. There's no just supplements. that everyone should take. You know, I took selenium, I took DHEA, but it was depending on what I was working on at the time. There are things I take today that are just kind of in the regular mix, like vitamin D, omegas, glutathione, NAC. I feel good. You know, my whole goal is to have energy to be present with my kids, because I was crashing on the couch. I didn't want to hang out with them. And that's not the mom I want to be. So every choice of my day, how I eat, how I work out, how I, you know, put myself to bed early is to have energy for my kids and my family.
I'm sorry to break into the show, but I wanted to take a second to cover one of our sponsors and tell you all about Paleo Valley at paleovalley.com. These are the grass-fed sticks that I tell you all so much about that all of my friends know I have on hand constantly. They are in my car. They are at my house. I keep them at my sister's home and my parents' house. I have these things everywhere because they are the simplest, most convenient whole foods protein supplement you can get. Almost like carrying around pure protein, low carb protein in your pocket. They also, these Paleo Valley beef sticks are the only 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef sticks on the market. They use organic spices. They are naturally fermented instead of using nitrates and nitrites that can be a problem in some of these cured meats. And they simply taste fantastic. Check out the original or the jalapeno. Those are my favorites. Please make sure you go over to paleovalley.com and visit. When checking out, use the code NEXTLEVEL for a 15% discount. Remember, our sponsors keep the show going by you giving them your patronage and spending your money on these high quality products. You actually do a few things. One, you're helping to support the podcast. And two, you are helping your health. And three, you are making sure that good quality companies like Paleo Valley can be out there doing their business, changing the world, making the earth better. One of the things you may not know about this is that grass-fed organic and grass-finished beef is doing something that is so utterly important for our environment, actually helping to repopulate the topsoil. A lot of people don't know this, but our topsoil is being extremely depleted. And raising animals, especially cattle, the correct way helps to get that topsoil back. This is one of the reasons why I love Paleo Valley. Not to mention it tastes fantastic, but they're one of these companies, like my other sponsors, Cured Nutrition and Organifi, that are doing the right things by the environment. I really appreciate everything they do, and I hope you will check them out. Thanks so much. PaleoValley.com. Use the code NEXTLEVEL. And now back to the show.
Yeah. Let me get you listeners caught up on this. And Emily, you just jump in if I'm sort of missing anything here. But I want to give you all listening just some clinical pearls. Also, you can kind of go back in the archives of this podcast, and there's a few in-depth podcasts on diagnosing thyroid. But one of the things that Emily is really sort of pushing us towards that I want to make sure you, the listener, sort of understand is notice how when you're dealing with something like Hashimoto's and autoimmune, there are potentially a lot of causes and or contributing factors. And most physicians are not aware of this, and most clients or patients are not going to know what to ask their physician about. But for you listeners, the big thing is to think about some of the things Emily was pointing us to, which are the environmental components. So three really big ones, actually, that she's pointing to, and then one more that is a little bit more esoteric, but we should cover as well. But mold is a huge one that most people don't know. So Emily's pointing us towards that. Certainly persistent organic pollutants. These would be chemicals of industry, things like that are a big deal. So you think about mold remediation, fixing up the condos, something Emily did. Doing saunas can help eliminate some of that mold toxicity from the body, as well as persistent organic pollutants, which is something Emily did as well. Obviously, gut function, and this again is a hidden environmental factor with parasites and things like that as well. And then another one that is potentially on the rise that a lot of us aren't paying much attention to would be EMF exposure, you know, from Wi-Fi and all of these things. Now, to be clear, not everyone is going to have issues with all of these things. However, they are things that we're going to be ticking off and looking at as we're trying to make this diagnosis. And then real quick, Emily, if you don't mind, I'm just going to run them through the labs real quick. If you were wanting to determine whether you are going to, you know, you're dealing with something like Hashimoto's, what you really want is you want more than the TSH. And so you want TSH. Usually the labs I would run would be TSH, free T3, free T4, a reverse T3, which almost no doctors will run. That's important for cellular or tissue level hypothyroidism. Then, of course, the antibodies that tell you if this is Hashimoto's or not. Now, your conventional physician is going to tell you none of this really matters because their treatment is going to be the same. But if you're listening to what Emily's telling us, is the treatment actually is very dependent on the individual. And so look at all the steps that she went through. The final thing I want to ask you about is, so let's just go through this diet really quickly. So you said you did, you know, 5 eggs in the morning, and then you didn't, you ate regular meals, which is important when you're dealing with thyroid stuff to keep your blood sugar levels stable, because that can be something that it causes some insulin resistance and blood sugar stuff. But so how about lunch? What was that like? Chicken breast and salad? It sounds like you were doing a lot of, you know, lean proteins and salad based stuff.
Yeah, I do better with cooked vegetables. I do love my salads, but I do better just digestion wise with cooked vegetables. So everything's kind of mush. I miss that crunch. But yeah, so it would be broccoli and chicken. And then usually at night, it was either salmon and steak, asparagus. Maybe it was a sweet potato at night just to like help with some sleep, insomnia issues. It was kind of boring and it was kind of basic and repetitive. I do believe in having biodiversity in our, how we're eating, to have, you know, flexibility and biodiversity in our gut microbiome. But when I very first started, I was almost on like medical grade shakes. I was on a Zymogen pea protein, because everything I ate, my tongue would burn. I would get immediate brain fog. I felt like I had to take a nap after I was eating. So probably for 3 months, I was on a medical grade Zymogen pea protein shake, just to, and some glutamine. So it's like glutamine and aloe, just to start to heal the gut so that I could tolerate food.
Yeah. And so here's another one that Emily's pointing us to, right? So another way we could think about toxicity is some of the toxicity that is coming from the foods that we are eating as well. She talked about gluten. She talked about dairy. Now, again, this isn't going to be the case for everyone, but this is something that we would be looking at with Hashimoto's. And then, of course, you began to feel better. Talk to us about your approach to exercise, because I know this is a little bit different. Most of the time, you know, if we're just dealing with, you know, off the shelf recommendations right now, it's still, I mean, you know, we're going on, yeah, for me, it's going on 20 years now where it's like, you know, low carb and Metcons, basically, you know what I mean? And like lots of metabolic conditioning, and it's, you know, more is better still in the industry, unfortunately, and even for people who are dealing with this kind of stuff. And so walk us through how you see this, because I think most people would say, oh, well, I need to exercise. And the more is better normally is the way we think about this. And you come at this from a very different perspective. So if I'm someone with Hashimoto's and I am, you know, dealing with thyroid issues, what is the best approach for me to, you know, do exercise? And do I do it right away, by the way? You know, do we just jump right in to do an exercise?
Yeah. So I think there's the two ends of the spectrum, right? There's like, move more, get more cardio, do HIIT training. Or there's the other end, which almost feels like you're not doing enough. Oftentimes from conventional medicine, even from functional medicine doctor friends, go for a walk, stretch, do some yoga, Pilates, low impact. And I think on that end of the spectrum, right, I think they're trying to protect, you know, a patient's adrenals, is it's not enough. So I really frame exercise as we need to feed the muscle tissue. It's already hard to keep our muscle tissue on if you have a hypothyroid component to your diagnosis. But we don't want to do it to the point where we are burning out doing, you know, Metcon HIIT training. So I really love resistance training 3 days a week. For someone who's more deconditioned, they will have to work up to that. For someone who's doing maybe CrossFit 6 days a week, they might have to dial it down. And I kind of like think of it as the Goldilocks sweet spot of, you know, 3 days a week, 20, 30 minutes. I want someone to hit that perceived exertion of fatigue of like a 7 or 8 out of 10. So I want someone to lift a heavier weight, maybe less reps, and then long rest breaks. So I use kettlebells because that's what my training's in. I find them very easy for beginners to use versus like a barbell, or sometimes dumbbells can get kind of like clunky, especially if you're doing like a farmer's walk or a heavy carry, kind of clunk around the legs. But, and I like full body movements. So deadlift, squat, push, pull, carry, anti-rotation lunge. And that's how I program it for the women with Hashimoto's. Some women, you know, if all the other stressors in life are in check, like they're sleeping well, they're not stressed in their work or financially or in their family, they're eating well, you know, all those other things, then yeah, we can dial it up. But it doesn't have to look like maybe culturally what we assume workout should look like. I think culturally we're like, oh, it has to be. I literally just had someone DM me. She's like, I thought I was supposed to go to the gym every day. It seems like everyone around me goes to the gym every day. I go, no, you don't have to go to the gym every day. You just need to, when you do work out, make it hard. And it doesn't have to be a Metcon, and it doesn't have to be every day. I think similar, I think you have like this W by four. I was listening to one of your podcasts, mm-hmm. and I think it's very similar. It's like, you don't have to work out a ton, but when you do, you work out hard, and then you give yourself long rest breaks.
Yeah, I love that. I would actually, you know, say a couple things at Emily's point to this. Absolutely, absolutely crucial for all of us to listen to. Overdoing workouts can be an issue when you don't have the energy. However, when most people, you're saying a couple things here that I love. When most people think about resistance training or working out in general, they typically think of getting breathless, and they don't feel like they're getting a workout unless they're getting breathless. And so when you're talking about, you know, sort of lifting heavy, you know, from my perspective, I talk about the B's and the H's, breathless, burning, heavy heat. From my perspective with this kind of training, and it sounds like this is what you're doing, Emily, is that we're really focusing on either A, most importantly, the heavy straining component, and or the burning component, and then taking long rests once you get to that point. This, to me, does not overtax the central nervous system and really is more muscle centric. Would you agree with that? Do you have a burning component in here? Is it mainly just the heavy straining component?
Yeah, I mean, I explain it two ways, which I think a lot of the industry describes as like rate of perceived exertion, 7 or 8 out of 10. For me, I have a hard time visualizing that when I'm in the moment. So by the last couple reps, I ask myself, okay, do I have 2 more in the tank? And that's how I tell my women. So if you have 5 more, 10 more in the tank, we either need to pick up a heavier weight. We could change the rep scheme, but I mean, we can talk about why I don't go high reps. And we're just trying to hit the burn and that, you know, 2 more in the tank feeling. That's what resonates with me. Women kind of get that. They're like, okay, do I have 2 more? Oh, maybe. Do I have 5 more? Oh, okay. I haven't picked up a heavy enough weight. I think one of the things that I really love, and you talk about this in terms of stress, is like, we need to kind of like lean into stress. We shouldn't avoid stress, is this idea of like nervous system regulation during our rest breaks, between our sets. So I will have women hum, sing, put their tongue on the roof of their mouth, try and extend their exhale, make it longer than their inhale during their rest breaks, so that, you know, people do this kind of training seated, this vagal nerve toning. Well, why not do it when you are in the moment to create this stress resilience? Because really the people who are the most resilient can come down from a high stress into that kind of parasympathetic state really quickly, right? And they kind of bounce between the two states quickly and easily. I've noticed those are kind of the high performers versus staying in that chronic stress, ruminating. So instead of training that in a seated position, why not train it through your workout? Because you're creating a stressor by picking up a weight, and then you can use vagal nerve toning, like humming, singing, trying to extend your exhale, putting your tongue on the roof of your mouth to drop yourself back into that calm state. So I do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. And so I do that with the women. And I think the whole point is sometimes with Hashimoto's, we are seen and maybe we see ourselves as kind of like delicate or frail or don't overdo it. It's like, no, we want to build resilience. We would just want to do it in these small doses. We don't need to be doing an ultra marathon to build resilience. We need to just pick up a heavy weight, train our nervous system, pick up a heavy weight again. So that's what I try to change that mindset of like, oh, I can't do too much to, you can do it, just do it in doses and build that resilience.
Yeah. One of the things that I think you're doing here that I think is really cool, and I'll share something that I used to do back when, you know, all the diagnosis in the world was chronic fatigue. And, you know, that was just sort of a catch-all phrase for everything. You know, that's, there's a way to address that. But one of the things, if you're listening to Emily, that she's essentially saying, she's training the sympathetic parasympathetic response. I mean, ultimately what we want to be able to go stimulation sympathetic and then quickly recover. And if we are, you know, a lot of times when we talk about metabolic conditioning, I'm certainly famous for this, for people who are conditioned lifting weights faster, not faster reps, but, you know, shorter rest periods between sets can be really beneficial. But for people who are not conditioned, you really want to use that rest period to recover and become more parasympathetic. And so that's what Emily is really pushing us towards. And actually, you can actually do this. This is what I used to do with, because, you know, certainly clinically, I worked with a lot of thyroid, a lot of adrenal type stuff, a lot of people dealing with cancer, a lot of people dealing with many different types of autoimmune conditions. And you did not want to overly stress them in their workouts. And so I would have them wear heart rate monitors and actually look at where they were at the top of their sort of cycle. So let's say they're doing, you know, a heavy kettlebell deadlift and they're going through that and they get to that point where you're talking about, Emily, where it's like, okay, I probably have, you know, maybe one or two reps left in me. So they stop and they rest. At that point in time, if you look at your heart rate should come down about 20 beats per minute. And you'll see pretty quickly if you're overexerting yourself in the workout, you're going to see that that response from top stimulation, top heart rate to recovery is going to start to become much reduced. So you might start out the workout quickly able to drop 20 beats per minute. Then you start seeing that you're only coming down 10 or you're only coming down a little bit. And I used to use that as my indication. Okay, the workout is at this point going to be done if we're not sort of getting this heart rate recovery. You're doing something really interesting, though, because you're using the set, the working set and the resting set both to control a physiology. And so, you know, the humming releases a ton of nitric oxide, the slow exhale is sort of making us more parasympathetic, which we should be. So I imagine you're automatically taking, you know, helping them drop that heart rate, you know, down a little bit. And so a lot of people don't necessarily think about the rest between sets as being so important, but it sounds like you're making sure that that is the case. Now, how long with these, how long do you think typically people would be resting? I assume you're just letting them rest for as long as they need to, but what's the rest that you would recommend, or how long is that going to take?
Yeah. I mean, I would say minimum a minute, which if you've never done that before, can feel like a really long time.
Short. Yeah.
You know, for women who, are more fatigued or maybe don't have all, you know, maybe their thyroid isn't being managed. They're, you know, they're just really struggling fatigue. I'll have them rest longer. So like 2 minutes, 3 minutes, which can also feel like a long time if you've never done it before. But I just find that when women do that, they don't feel that kind of crash. You know, there's women who they work out and it's like, oh my God, I can't get out of bed for 3 days. They're so fatigued. And so I want them to build muscle or maintain their muscle mass, but I don't want them to hit that fatigue piece. And some of them don't have access to amazing doctors who can help them with the adrenal and the thyroid, you know, components. So I'm trying to kind of almost like microdose their workout, make it accessible, give them a win, without, you know, overstressing them or tanking them out, basically.
But I want to jump in real quick and tell you about one of my favorite new products. And to start out, I want to ask you a question. If you had to follow your friends around who are not the healthiest in the world and see what they are doing, what would be the number one thing you would probably tell them to do to start? For most people, that's going to be drinking more water, right? This is something that we talk about all the time in health and fitness. It's almost as if we think of it as an afterthought now, because obviously water is so crucial. However, we oftentimes get this wrong. For example, did you know that when it comes to hydration, just drinking water can make things worse? Most people don't know this. Why? Partly because most people are over drinking water and under consuming the electrolytes that help water do its job. What we don't realize is that hydration is not just about water. It's about electrolytes, the minerals in there, as well as getting that water into the cells. And so you do not want to be over consuming water if you're not getting your electrolytes right. And this opens up a whole new discussion, because most people are not getting their electrolytes right. For example, did you know that low sodium, too low sodium, is an issue? Just as much, if not more so, than high sodium. In other words, what we want, if we're going to get the right electrolytes, is to get the right amount of sodium and potassium and magnesium in the Goldilocks zone. We don't want too much. We don't want too little. We want it just right. This opens up a whole other thing here too, because people who are exercising, doing sauna therapies, doing low carb diets are disrupting and losing lots and lots of their electrolytes. For example, when insulin is not around in low carb diets, you will excrete lots of sodium. In other words, under that state, exercising, low carb diets, all these things, you actually need more sodium. And so if you're somebody who has been just drinking water, not paying attention to electrolytes, and also feeling fatigued, feeling like you're underperforming, not sleeping right, getting cramps, twitches, headaches, any of these things, then you are probably dealing with an electrolyte issue. This is where the product Element comes in. This product has been a game changer for me and many, many of my patients and clients. This is a rehydration electrolyte beverage, basically. It is a powder of electrolytes formulated with 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, and 60 milligrams magnesium, without the added sugar and other nonsense that comes in beverages like Gatorade. This stuff is basically a rehydration beverage on steroids. It is the thing that is going to replenish your electrolytes in the right ratios, decrease fatigue, really correct chronic dehydration. And by the way, many people are dehydrating themselves, becoming hyponatremic, low sodium, when they're consuming too much water. You need your electrolytes on board, especially if you are someone who is losing lots of sodium and other electrolytes through low carb diets and lots of exercise. This is where Element comes in. Element is a new sponsor to the Next Level Human podcast. I cannot recommend this product enough. I have been using this stuff for months now, and I have immediately seen changes in my energy levels. I feel like I'm operating on a whole other level, and I have seen this as being the primary thing that people who have been using Element have been telling me, that their fatigue is getting better, especially fatigue that comes after very intense workouts that involve lots of sweating and lots of intense output from the nervous system. Please check out Element. Use the code NEXTLEVEL. Drinkelement.com. That's DRINKELMNT.com. Drinkelement.com, and let's get back to the show.
Yeah. And what are they doing on their days off? So I'm assuming on their days off, what do you have them doing? Are they doing mobility stuff? You're a chiropractor, obviously. You know, are they doing just walking? What are they doing on those off days?
Yeah. So on the off days, walking. And then I have a mobility flow, I guess you could call it. It comes from the background of DNS, dynamic neuromuscular stabilization, who was started by, it's in the Czech Republic, started by Pavel Kolaj. And he looks at how babies learned their movement patterns and hit their developmental milestones through that first year to 2 years of life. So a baby, the first 6 months, all they learn to do is lift their knees to 90 and create a good core stabilization, good intra-abdominal pressure, good, you know, stack in the spine. Then they roll at 4.5 months, they get on hands and knees, they rock, half knee up to stand, right? Through that first year. And so that is the movement flow that it takes about maybe 10, 15 minutes, but it's focused on breathing and it's focused on that stabilization component, especially that intra-abdominal pressure. And I do that because, you know, through practice, I was noticing if there was tightness in a certain muscle, oftentimes it was a compensation due to weakness somewhere else. Obviously, it's different if there was like underuse, so it was tight and weak. That's one thing. But almost like an example that might be easy for people to think about is, you know, everyone talks about tight hip flexors. If you're sitting all day, stretch your hip flexors. Well, are those tight hip flexors a compensation due to underactive, you know, you could call it weakness, underactive stability in the core and the glutes? Well, if you address the core and the glutes, maybe the hip flexors will just let go without having to foam roll, mobilize, half kneel, stretch. The whole movement flow can be done body weight or it can be done with a weight. Because, you know, if you think about that first move where you're on your back, knees are at 90, kind of similar to the start of a dead bug. Oftentimes people will have their ribs flared, their back will be arched, they're over-recruiting their hip flexors. You just put a kettlebell in their hand or a weight and have them push it towards the sky, it forces intra-abdominal pressure. Like you have to brace against that weight. And that helps create this good stabilization. And those things that are tight, like your hip flexors or your back is arching, they let go or they find their proper positioning. So that is a movement flow. And I also use that when I'm cueing the strength moves. So, and even before you're picking up a weight, we're talking about how to breathe, how to brace, how to, what I call get stacked. So like if you're lifting, I'm trying to think, a press, an overhead press, right? So you're pressing people when they start to fatigue or maybe they don't know good form, they will, you know, they'll lean to the side or they'll arch. Well, that's a pathological positioning. That is fatigue on a kind of subconscious biomechanical level. So in an ideal world, you want to stay stacked. You want your ribs right over your pelvis. You want a breath down and wide and all the way around. You want to be braced. And I think, especially for women who have been told to suck in, pull your belly to your spine, draw up and in, you know, suck in just to like put on a dress to look, you know, to skinny up the waistline. We think when we pick up a weight, we should be doing that. And that's not how we should be picking up a weight. When we create that intra-abdominal pressure, it actually pushes our spine out of extension and creates a rigidity in the spine. And we want that when we're picking up a weight. We don't want that as we're like moving through the world. But in that moment where we have to load, we want to create that brace and create that good intra-abdominal pressure. I think a lot of women don't know that piece. So we start with the breath, brace, getting what I call stacked. And then we load. And, you know, clinically, and there's no research on this, I kind of check once a week to see if there's any research on this, is clinically, just working with many, many women, autoimmune women, I notice this element of hypermobility, tissue laxity. I've talked to other people. One of them would be Jessica Drummond. She's on the East Coast. She's a PT. She's seen it with more post-COVID long haulers where there's intermittent tissue laxity, hypermobility. But I'll check a Baton score, which is a physical therapy orthopedic test, looking at the laxity of knee extension, elbow extension, thumbs, being able to, you know, touch it to the soft part of your forearm, bending your pinky back beyond 90, feet together, bend forward, touch the toes, knees straight, and you can palm the floor. So those are 9 points to check. And if those points come, you know, show up as hyperextension, then you know you're on the high, you know, there's a tissue laxity spectrum. You know, the far end of the spectrum would be an Ehlers Danlos, right? A genetic component. But I found this in the autoimmune population. And so when I had them pick up a weight, there was specific cueing because I didn't want them to just stand up from a deadlift and jam their knees into hyperextension, right? Especially because a lot of women already have knee pain. They don't need more knee pain. So some of the cueing was foot dialing, right? I think everyone who's maybe more knows the nuances of lifting will know that, but someone who's never picked up a weight is not going to know how to foot dial. Some of the things, for example, like in a push-up, I'll have someone really push down through their knuckle. And when you do that, and this comes back to DNS and Pavel Kolaj's work, is when babies are crawling and they push down through that index knuckle, that's like it creates serratus activation and good shoulder stability where the shoulder blades are going down and wide. And a baby who's developing well, when they start to crawl, will push down through that knuckle. A baby who's not developing well will kind of stay on the outside of their hands when they're crawling. So, you know, I took that and was like, okay, well, let's do that in a push-up. Let's root down that index knuckle, get that serratus activation. So as you're pushing the floor away, you're getting good shoulder stability. So these were some of the things that are nuanced and are a little different than maybe just kind of like, hey, we're going to go to see a trainer and lift. Because I think just from clinical experience, if there is someone with an autoimmune condition, if they have any hypermobility, it's hard for them with their proprioception to find where they are in time and space. They're usually hanging out on their joints, having pain. So really good cueing will help them not only get strong, use their muscles, stack their joints, but is a component in helping them get out of pain in addition to properly treating their thyroid.
Yeah. And for you, for those of you listening, if you are, you have to listen close to Emily, because I want to add some things here. I have seen the same thing. I've actually seen it both ways, though. I've seen hypermobility and hypomobility. Rarely do you see somebody, you know, who's dealing with Hashimoto's where they move really well. I've seen both of those. And also what comes along with both of those is pain, muscle pain, cramps, fasciculations, lots of different issues that you see here. And one of the things that I think is really important that you're doing here, Emily, that I think people might miss is that if you are someone who's hypo or hypermobile and dealing with some of the muscle aches, pains, fasciculations, cramps, all the stuff in the muscles that many of us with autoimmune conditions can deal with, it becomes much more important to listen to what Emily's saying here, because a lot of people will just go, I'm just going to start picking up some weights and I'm just going to, you know, get into this stuff. And what ends up happening is they either injure themselves outright and or they make this sort of muscle pain, muscle fatigue worse. And for those of you who are listening to this and don't deal with this or don't know what you're talking about, I can speak from my personal experience and also from a lot of people who deal with Hashimoto's. Sometimes if my Hashimoto's would flare in the past, I would feel for days like I just did a workout and I hadn't worked out at all. It's this just diffuse muscle soreness sort of across the board. It's painful. And also you don't have the motivation. Just like if you did a really hard workout and you're super sore, last thing you want to do is go back in to the gym. And so this would happen to me a lot. And I had to learn a lot of what Emily's actually talking about, where I would go into the gym when I was feeling this way and just move in particular ways and focus on where I'm putting, getting my feet anchored to the floor, like she's talking about, you know, making sure I'm going through full range of motion, really focusing on good quality movement, doing things like carries and things like that, that are helping me and keeping me bracing. And this was hugely beneficial in keeping me in the gym. Of course, it can be incredibly difficult and not motivational, but this stuff is critical. And a lot of people, I think, Emily, don't necessarily realize this because they just pick up the weights and start going at it. So what I want to know from you before I let you go is I want to know, so can you walk? I know you have your thyroid strong, you know, sort of programming. So I assume that goes through all the details here. But if we were going to just give individuals who are listening to this sort of a, you know, Dr. Kybird sort of 1, 2, 3, it sounds like right now, at least with working out, it sounds like 3 times per week, you know, perhaps a little bit less if you're deconditioned. I mean, if you're very conditioned, perhaps a little bit more, but you seem to say your sweet spot is 3 times per week with the weights. You tend to like kettlebells, which, you know, I can see why they can be slightly easier to handle, especially for people who are beginners. And they do work on a lot of these stability issues where, you know, dumbbells and barbells oftentimes don't. But can you walk us through what a typical workout would be like? How do you program this? Is this upper, lower, upper? Are these 3 full body workouts? Are they the same workouts? I know you say you use a lot of compound lifts, so I'm assuming there's deadlifts and squats and, you know, things like that. But can you walk us through a typical workout, you know, sort of program that you would, you know, think would be a good starting point?
Yeah, all workouts are full body. Usually is a hinge and a press. So like a deadlift, I like to start with the floor press so you can keep your ribs down. So you're laying on the floor, pressing the belt to the floor. If that's too much, because that's a lot for a lot of women, I'll start elevated plank, elevated push-ups. So you're just creating that push, that full body tension integrity in the joints.
So, I'll so when you say together. A press on the floor, you mean on your back pressing the dumbbell for like a shoulder press? Single arms or double
single arm? Yeah, single arm. So you're on the back, feet are on the floor, roll to the side, get the kettlebell, press it towards the sky. Sometimes I won't even have them go through the presses. If it's more of a beginner, they're just holding the bell, just trying to create a grip strength, right? Because grip is tied to shoulder stability as well as longevity. They're breathing, they're bracing, they're just getting used to like weight over their body. So a hinge and a press. And some, you know, for some women, just more on the deconditioned side, it's elevated plank off the side of your couch. Just something to give them a win. Then we progress. We'll put in some push-ups. Then we'll progress to a floor press. Then we'll progress to like a half kneel racked hold press. And then eventually overhead. So pair those two together. I'll do a squat in a row. Squats and lunges are very challenging for the autoimmune population. We have slower tendon turnover, specifically like patellar tendon and tendons of our rotator cuff. And so I'll do some regressions. You know, you do a lot of regressions and progressions based on, you know, where meeting the person where they're at. So maybe it's squatting to a chair versus kind of going your tush below 90. And I really love goblet squats. I love versus a back squat, right? Because you have to kind of like wedge the bar in and you're kind of just ever so slight cranking yourself into a little bit of extension. But if we're trying to stay stacked and keep a good brace, for someone who's newer, they'll just kind of like flare their ribs. And I don't want that. I want them to learn how to create that good intra-abdominal pressure. So I love a goblet squat, kettlebell in the front. As they go down, I have them bring the kettlebell ever so slightly forward just so they can counterbalance against it. But maybe it's just squatting to a chair first. And then rows. I love a gorilla row where you're like pushing down to pull. So there's like two bells. You're kind of in a hinge. So you're pushing to pull. And then I'll do a lunge and a carry together. Lunges, you know, very challenging, especially with like joint pain, knee pain for people who are deconditioned, who aren't used to bending their knee in that capacity. It might be tapping the back knee to a block. It might be using a TRX to help them counter their body weight. I really love an asymmetrical heavy carry. So just one hand versus two. Two, I find works more lats, single bell on one side. I find works more kind of anti-rotation core. So I love a single bell carry. And all of it, you know, I tell my women, I'm like, every rep is a perfect rep of one. Sometimes I think we can get overwhelmed with like, oh, I got to get through da-da-da reps. Like every rep's a perfect rep of one. It's amazing form. You got your breath, your brace dialed in. And just giving them wins. Sometimes I'll program it kind of similar to what I was listening to, the 10 down to 1, where you're starting your hardest set with the most volume. I do that. I'll do like 10, 8, 6, 4. I find that women can kind of wrap their head around that. For someone who's more of a beginner, it's lower reps. I'm just trying to get them wins. A lot of women are scared to pick up a weight. They're worried about injuring themselves or worry about exacerbating their joint pain or muscle aches. For women in the beginning, I might program 5, you know, but I'm going to be like, let's get the weight heavier. So at least you are getting, you can up the volume. So that's how I program. Everything's full. You know, I get a lot of people like upper, lower. I try to make it simple, and I also want people to take rest days in between their workouts. So yeah, I do full body 3 days a week. Sometimes.
Yeah. And I love this, Emily, because if you're, for those of you who know, you can see this is incredibly well thought out. You know, it's essentially working every aspect. It's, there's a push and pull in there. So you're balancing, you know, sort of the body that way. There's a hinge and a squat in there. And then there's carries and lunges. And so you're basically getting every single aspect of mobility and stability while you are in your workout. And I love the idea that you stay low in repetitions and really help people control the weight and be able to work up and get heavy. Because I do think a lot of people very quickly just focus on repetitions. And what happens is they're just swinging weight around and they're not actually in control. Their nervous system really isn't in control. Their muscle really isn't in control. And they're compensating in a lot of ways. And I do think that in the beginning, going less weight with, you know, less reps with heavier weight is a really great move, but it's kind of counterintuitive unless you have someone like you explain sort of why you are doing that. So let's begin to wrap up, but go ahead. And you wanted to add something there?
I was just going to say there's so many strategies to increase the intensity without increasing the reps, right? Yeah. So a 3-second eccentric phase, slow lowering, a pause at the bottom, instead of parking the weight in between sides, like if you're doing an asymmetrical heavy carry, just switch hands, right? You're more time under load, which will increase your heart rate, increase your breath rate, will make it harder, but you don't necessarily have to be like, okay, now I have to do 3 sets of 15.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I love that a lot. And one of the things I want to point out to all you listeners that, you know, Dr. Kybert is sort of, it's really interesting. From my perspective, one of the things, that the reasons I wanted to have you on is because very few practitioners that I see make, you know, really understand and are making the resistance training aspect of this the center point of their treatment. And I do, you know, I also don't have any research to back this up. This is just going to be a clinical sort of hypothesis and a bias of mine. But one of the things that I have seen, and it certainly is a bias of mine, is that the individuals who heal from this stuff, do make, you know, big lifestyle changes. And so if we're listening to Emily's story, it's like, you know, it's around sleep, it's around diet, it's around, you know, finding root cause. But then there's this aspect of like, what is the biggest metabolic potential on our body? The one thing from my perspective that when we move our muscle, we are releasing myokines and these little muscle molecules that you guys have heard me talk about a lot over the years. And these things do everything from controlling immune function to helping build muscle to burning fat to controlling mood to all kinds of things. And we are ignoring that potential with conditions like Hashimoto's if we are not making this a more muscle-centric sort of treatment modality. And so a lot of people just see the muscle aspect of things as secondary. And I love that you're essentially making this, you know, sort of the primary thing, and also doing it in a way that, you know, obviously is, you know, sustainable and gentle and where people can sort of learn from you. So I just want to sum up some of the things that you told us. Have you just fill in any gaps that, you know, you think I may have missed? And then let's talk about how people can work with you, get your programs and things like that. So if I'm understanding you correctly on this journey of yours, right? So there were multiple potential factors, and it sounds like we wouldn't necessarily be able to know which ones in your particular case were the true causes and or contributing factors. And maybe they all were causes. But as we're listening to Emily's story, she's got, you know, a history of parasites and travel. She's got, you know, she lives in New York City, you know, a stressful, you know, sort of place, or did. I don't know if you're still there. And, you know, she was dealing with mold toxicity. And there were multiple different sort of causes that she began to look at to address this. And I don't think you can address conditions like this unless you are going and looking at root cause stuff. And so in that regard, she did a lot that, you know, probably we, probably may have missed if we weren't paying attention. But mitigating your home from mold is incredibly expensive. It's difficult. You have to know where it is, right? Like, but that has to happen. And so that's something that, you know, she went through. Sauna therapies. These things can be incredibly beneficial through sweating, gut, you know, sort of protocols. And there were some conventional medications involved there in the beginning. And she was on a T3 for a little while. But then she quickly, as she's doing all this, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because there's nothing wrong. In fact, you want to go this route. These things can be very beneficial. The problem is we get into trouble with medicine, and you will get into trouble in trying to heal yourself if you stop there. You have to find these causative factors. You have to make the dietary changes. And think about what, you know, it's funny, Emily's a lot like me. So she's, you know, she talked about living the Parisian lifestyle. I'm Italian, right? So pastas and cheeses and all these things, those are hard things to give up. She did all that as well, right? And then you look at, you know, now with her background as a chiropractor and a conditioning, you know, specialist in a sense, then she brings in this, you know, muscle centric sort of, very specific workout regime that doesn't overtax the system and get you feeling strong again. But I want to make sure when people go, because they're going to say all the time, Emily, right? People go, you know it, you hear it too, where it's like, well, I have Hashimoto's and what do I need to do? Well, there's perhaps a lot that you need to do. And it, in my opinion, you should be working with someone like Emily who's gone through all of this. But you're not going to be able to heal, in my mind, without finding the causes, the first part of her story. And you're not going to be able to stay functional over the long run if you don't make this a lifestyle, the second part of her story and the workout aspect of this. And so, you know, what I want to know is, what did I miss there that, you know, you were thinking, okay, Jade, you're missing this component. What are other things that perhaps you want to add on to this? And then I want to make sure the listener, you know, gets a chance to understand how they can perhaps get more of your information.
Yeah, I think working with a practitioner who can create a hierarchy of what is most important to treat first. I think some women work with maybe newer practitioners, and the practitioner is trying to treat everything at once, and they feel overwhelmed, and they're on, you know, 50 supplements. I take a ton of supplements, but I love taking them. And I think working with a practitioner who can create just a clear game plan and like, we need to treat this first. Yes, you have mold, but like, maybe we need to get your gut health in a good place so that you're not reacting to everything you eat before we then put you through this mold protocol. I think a good practitioner and really taking the time to find a good practitioner who resonates, who listens, who can create a hierarchy of what's the most important to, you know, prioritize what do we treat first? Then what do we treat next? I think that's an important piece that women, maybe they work with a couple practitioners or functional nutritionists or whoever, and they kind of get frustrated. For me in my journey, I think when you get, I'm sure you felt this, you get to the darkest depths of your diagnosis and you're like, I will do whatever it takes. Just tell me what to do. So for me, when it was going gluten-free and changing all these making these dietary changes, it wasn't a rumination. It wasn't a struggle. It wasn't like, oh, but I want a piece of, you know, I want a baguette. It was like, great, no gluten. And it was a non-negotiable, but it wasn't a struggle because my desire to get better was so much stronger than any sort of desire to have my morning croissant.
Yeah, 100%.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So tell us where they can find you. I know I just started following you on social. So, and was going through your stuff right before this conversation, and you put out just really amazing stuff. So why don't you tell them where they can find you on social? And I know you have, you know, a program. I don't know if you're taking people into that program currently, but tell us how they can get more of your information and get involved with your work.
Yeah. So Dr. Emily Kybird across all social, including TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and you know, the education I try to put out there is things that I wish I knew on my journey. I know there's information overload, but I think just taking it in, processing it, and seeing what resonates, I think is really helpful. you know, I feel like when I was going through my journey, this kind of social media presence wasn't even out there. I have a program called Thyroid Strong. There's a 6-week and a 12-week version, and it is literally to help women learn how to work out without the burnout. Kettlebell-based online program. I'm doing a masterclass next week, May 15th, called The Thyroid Revolution. And it's a mix of
good timing.
Yeah. Mix of workouts along with just 2 shorter masterclasses, just starting to get the information of a muscle-centric approach, why to prioritize protein, why to prioritize resistance training. And we'll also kind of dapple in the beginnings of starting to identify some environmental triggers. I think when we have more knowledge, we can ask better questions of our doctors. Sometimes we go to our doctor and it's just kind of a one-way conversation, right? Medications, you're going to live with this forever. This is how it's going to be. Versus like, oh, if you could ask better questions, you could get better answers. And so that's what I want to empower women to learn. And in addition to like pick up a heavy weight, it will make you resilient and change your life. So that's DrEmilyKuybert.com/rev for the Thyroid Revolution. And, you know, if I had known so much more in the beginning of my journey, I feel like those years of my life where I could have been more present with my newborn would be different versus basically trying to sleep every minute I wasn't working. And so if I can help women, whatever their why is, even if they don't have kids, like if it's like, I want to, you know, travel or have the energy to do, you know, fill in the blank, that is like a beautiful transformation that I'm happy to assist in.
Yeah. That's the whole point of Next Level Human. It's basically taking our pains and our struggles and helping grow ourselves, enrich others, and evolve the world. And you're certainly doing that. So thank you so much, Emily. I'll rush out this podcast actually this week. So those who do want to get involved with the Thyroid Revolution, I'll drop this in ahead of the other ones because I think that's important that they sort of do that. And then also, what else was I going to say? I guess that's it. But you know what, Emily, I want to make sure that the recording doesn't get lost. So I'm going to stop recording and then you hang on the line. But all of you listening, thanks so much. And thank you to Dr. Emily Kuybert for hanging out. And we'll see you on the next show.
You have been listening to the Next Level Human podcast with Dr. Jade Tita. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure you subscribe and consider leaving a review. You make the biggest difference when you pass on your lessons and inspire others. That's why reviews like this are so powerful. Your words may be the only ones that resonate for someone else. Please remember the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only. Always consult your personal physician or therapist before making any lifestyle changes. And finally, thank you for who you are in the world and the difference you make.